answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Doctor, if I really, really would, but the feeling in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give the information, asking for more, but blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome to hour number two, and you are listening to the Common Sense Show, and we're coming to you live as we do every Sunday evening from 9 p.m. Central to midnight. Our special guest is Pat Wood, and we'll be rejoining Pat in just a moment. I just want to take a second here to promote what we're doing next week. We have economist Joseph Meyer on, and he's going to shock the living bejesus out of you when you listen, because his economic predictions have been right on for a long time, and he's got some pretty tough things to say about where we're headed with this economy. And next week we'll also be joined by fellow talk show host and my colleague and partner, Joshua Coy. And his case may represent the first medical kidnapping of a radio talk show host in history. And if you're doing a double take on what I just said, yeah, you're not going to want to miss this. It's crazy. Anyway, the third hour, you want to stay tuned for Annie's News and Katie's Health Report. Pat, let's go back to technocracy, and let's talk about the NSA for a moment. When you were talking about the smart grid, you mentioned that they wanted to do massive data gathering on individuals. Well, that seems like the NSA and what they're doing would lend itself nicely to that process.
Well, you're right on one hand, but I would say that you're not thinking quite big enough than when you just look at the NSA itself. The reason I say that is, starting in 2005, the entire intelligence network of agencies, or 17 agencies in America that are concerned with intelligence in one way or another, like the NSA, like the CIA, like the FBI, and so on, 17 of them, they were all wrapped up into one composite organization called, under the leadership of the Director of National Intelligence, the DNI, and they're all coordinated together. So the NSA doesn't act independently in any way, shape, or form. It's part of the office of DNI. And this office was established by George Bush in 2005, and the first director of the NSA, appointed by Bush, was Mr. John Negroponte, who was a member of the Trilateral Commission. This is the guy that restructured our entire intelligence network to be what it is today, including the NSA. So when I say we need to think bigger, we just need to get a higher horizon to see what's going on here. All of these intelligence agencies are working together in a lockstep fashion underneath the directorship of the DNI, who, by the way, even though that it's played down as a position, the DNI has line-level budget authority for every single intelligence agency in the country. That means they can't do squat unless the NSA has approved it and authorized it. So our entire intelligence network in America has been turned away from its original goal of gathering intelligence on non-American issues, and it's focused it on Americans. It's turned it inwards to collect information on Americans. And the NSA is one of the big ones. It's visible, highly visible, but there's 16 others that are doing the very same thing, and they're all building their database together. We talked about fusion centers once upon a time. fusion centers, whatever the Department of Homeland Security said fusion centers were for, it was bogus. Fusion centers were merely collection points for data in all 50 states around our country to feed all of the local information into this master database that's piloted by the DNI and all these other agencies. And so they've been doing this now for years, collecting information through the fusion centers to gather all the local agencies and stuff, their data, feed it all into the big system. And fortunately for us, so far, they do have a way to store the data they're collecting. What they don't have right now is the processing power and the algorithms to analyze that data like they want to analyze it in the near future. In other words, they can't really tell us what it means, what they're going to do with it. But when they finally are able to apply the supercomputers with the artificial intelligence type of scanning routines and so on to go to sweep through this data and start making policies out of it where they start, telling us what we can do in our lives, that's when we're going to be in big trouble, Dave. That's kind of I realize that's a long answer from where you started, but they haven't reached that point technologically yet where they can analyze all the data that they're collecting and storing.
But they're getting ready, because I've got it on good authority that Obama is handing off NSA data collections, at least the control over it, to the DHS. And the NSA is not an executive action group. DHS is, which means
Right. They're
preparing to act on this intelligence.
That's right, and they are. And all of this, again, all of this is orchestrated from the Director of National Intelligence. He's the guy that makes the marching orders for all of that. It's a cabinet-level position now. He answers directly to the president.
So knowing what you know, and I have my opinions too, because a lot of this reminds me of Fabian socialism, but knowing what you know, what kinds of enactments do you think we're going to see? What is so visible on the wall that you say they absolutely will do this?
Well, they're already doing it, for one. I mean, there's plenty of evidence that they're collecting the information. We've seen that for the last 4 or 5 years, just blatantly so. Phone calls, emails, data records from purchases, economic type data from purchases and bank records, stuff like that. All that stuff has been going in. The DHS just announced that it's going to re-implement its initiative for a national license plate reading scheme, where they're going to collect all the license plates at certain stations around cities and stuff on the highways. Well, the evidence is there. It's undeniable that they're doing it. The only reason is, why are they doing it? That's where people start to argue. Well, I don't think, if you don't have anything to hide, what do you have to worry about? That's hardly the point, is it, anymore? It's like, no, you won't have anything to hide. But when they come back to put teeth into their policies to tell you what you will and won't do, you won't have any choice about it.
This is a little off topic, but to those people that would say, what do you worry about? You don't have anything to hide. And until your political views or your religion or something about you is offensive to the people in power, or they perceive you as some kind of threat, even though you may not mean to be, that's what it means why you should care.
Well, that's right. And I would counter the argument a little bit like this. I would say, name me one agency that the current president has not used against his political enemies. Name one agency that he has not used against his political enemies. Well, would it be the Justice Department? Would it be the IRS? Would it be the State Department? And you can't name one. He's used them all. Now, just imagine if he gets a hold, if somebody like at the top is bad or worse than Obama, gets a hold of a potential political weapon like this, do you really think that they would not use it? That they would somehow hold back and be, oh, well, that's just too, that's just too dangerous. We're not going to mess with that. We're not going to do that. We'll just forget that. We'll put policies in place where it could never be used by, you know, by anybody against the American people. Well, that's, you know, when pigs fly.
Yeah. Help us understand this. We know the arguments for climate change are ridiculous and they're not scientifically proven or backed. Climate change has always been with us, but not in the models that are being presented today to promote the green economy, the green lifestyle. Why? To what end are they promoting this?
To implement technocracy as a global economic system. That's it.
And would you say that we could use the word enslavement to accompany the description?
It would result in that in the end, but that's exactly what it's all about. It's technocracy is designed to win over the world, to control the world, and people routinely throw back at me at this point and say, well, why would they want to destroy their own economic system? You know, I mean, what, if they destroy money, isn't their money going to be destroyed too? And the answer is yes, it will be. The price-based economic system goes out the door, you know, stage left, and technocracy comes in stage right. Well, mm-hmm. You have to understand that land and the minerals locked up in the land and the agriculture that comes out of the land all over the world is being locked up, sequestered, if you will, by governments around the world and by the United Nations. The land grabs that have happened in America in the last 50 years have not been just random grabbing, you know, where the government just goes and grabs this land. In the West, in some states, like in Idaho, 75% of the entire state of Idaho is owned by the federal government. What's this all about? Well, this is where the resources are. This is where the timber is. This is where the gold and silver is. This is where the uranium is. It's where the oil and gas is. They lock up the resources in preparation of putting them into a global trust run by global trustees for the quote-unquote public good. You see? In other words, you're not capable of deciding what you should consume that comes out of the earth. But these global trustees are much better suited, because they will have the PhDs and so on, to determine how much resources can be extracted from Mother Earth, who will do the extracting, and who will get the benefit. And in the end of it, the people that control the resources are the ones that win. And that's what this is all about. It's not about money, per se, but it's about who controls the resources. Because whoever controls the resources controls everybody's life down to the micromanaged level of what time you use the bathroom during the daytime or nighttime. It's that kind of micromanagement.
To show people how bad this can get, I read a couple of years ago, there are parts of Australia that actually charge residents by the flush when using their toilet. were you aware of that?
No, I never.
That could lead to a whole bunch of off-color jokes, which we'll avoid. But nonetheless, it just goes to illustrate the degree of control. But at what point do we start seeing this used directly towards depopulation?
You know, I think there's ample anecdotal evidence right now that the pressure for depopulation or reducing population is already in play. I think there's lots of initiatives that are reducing the population. And, you know, if you look at the demographic studies, for instance, in America, in Europe, in Asia, in China, Japan, demographics is going off the cliff right now. And, you know, the older generation, as it grows old and dies off, is not being replaced by people on the other end, by young people. And so population has already headed down globally. It's just a matter of time for it to work out, and people are living longer, so it still looks like the population is going up, but it's really not. There's not enough young people to replace the people that are dying.
Right. It takes 2.1 people to maintain your population growth, and if we did not have illegal immigration in this country, correct me if I'm wrong, Pat, I think we would be at about 1.6 without immigration.
That's right. You must have heard the same study. You're exactly right. And I think that demographers will say that no society in history has ever recovered from a condition below 1.7 replacement.
Which means we won't have enough workers, which might explain the globalist fascination for automation and the use of robots.
Here comes robots. That's right. It's all over the news right now, just in the last 6 months, big time, that robots are going to replace up to 40% of the workforce in the next 20 years. How's that going to work out for your budget?
Yeah. Well, they're not going to need the rest of us, that's for sure. And that's why I go back to the original question I asked that went down this line, and that's intentional depopulation. My money would be primarily on Obamacare. Primarily.
That's doing it whether anybody intends it or not.
Yeah.
It's already doing it. Yeah.
Well, you know what you're doing when you put death panels in. I mean, you had to have some forethought on why you would do something like that. But I have to believe there's going to be other factors involved related to this. Anything to indicate that these people want to do any kind of forced population redistribution, get people out of the extreme cold to save on heating costs, and get people out of Arizona to avoid air conditioning costs? Any thoughts on that, Pat?
I haven't seen anything specifically about the mass relocation of segments of population. However, we have a mass relocation of South American countries up here to America.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's already going on. And my friend Vicki Davis, by the way, whom I know you know, Vicki recently wrote a paper that had to do with refugees as a military weapon of war. In other words, refugees being used to relocate into areas that they want to destroy. It was a pretty insightful paper. She went back into history and gave several historical examples of where that's been done. And if her implication is right, then the policy to allow all these South Americans and Mexican citizens up into our country is really a political weapon that's being used to defeat us from within.
Well, the question I like to ask, how many people from a third world country can we take on until we become a third world country?
Well, we're about there, aren't we?
We're getting there. There's no question.
We're just about there. Yep.
Now back to the point where you said that you weren't aware of anything related to technocracy with regard to massive population distribution. I'll just kind of throw this out for everybody's FYI. Go to America2050.org. And the name of the guy who's behind this jumps out of my head, but he's a friend of the president. He's the head of a program, and in fact, I bet you've heard of this, Build One America, Bay Area One, which are the creation of micro apartments, the elimination of private transportation, and we're seeing this in New York, Fort Collins, Colorado, of all places, and also San Francisco in selected areas. And they talk about, by the year 2050, having 11 population centers, each populated with 6 million people. Now, obviously, there's a math problem there because clearly they don't want to kill off 250 million of us before 2050. But that's what it says. You go to their website, 2050.org. Don't do it now. America2050.org. And that's all there, Pat. And these are the people who are in league with this president. And I'll try to look up the name here during the break. But they're in league with this president, and they are attempting to impose Agenda 21 lifestyles all across this country. And this Mike Krulig, that's the man's name, Mike Krulig, just popped into my head. And he's the head of what's called Build One America. And this is this whole idea. They're the ones behind the building of the Chinese ghost cities that Hank Paulson's involved in, where they're going to relocate, and they already are, from rural to urban and densely populated Agenda 21 cities. It's all coming together, Pat.
This is Agenda 21. All over it. That's 100% Agenda 21.
Oh, it's just, I can't believe how fast they have moved in these areas.
Well, you know, they were, they've been moving for a number of years, David. It's just that nobody has really noticed that they're moving. You know, when you build a skyscraper, the planning for the skyscraper may take 5 years, 6 years, 10 years before they actually lay the first brick. But when that skyscraper finally starts going up, everybody drives by and goes, holy mackerel, where'd that thing come from? You know, it just popped up overnight. Say, well, it did, but you see, a project is completed. More work is done on a project at the end of it than in the beginning of it. That's all there is to it. And so they've been planning all this stuff for decades, and all of a sudden, all the structures start going up at the same time all over the world, like those ghost cities. And then, boom, there they are, and everybody goes, whoa, how'd that happen? How'd they just come out? Did that just happen out of the blue or what? Well, no, it didn't. They were planning those things for years before they actually started. And here we are, you know, looking at documents like websites like America 2050, which is just pure Agenda 21 stuff. You say, well, these people are planning for the future. They're saying it right here, but by the year 2050, everything they're laying the groundwork for today is going to be up and operating by 2050. That's their plan. Their project manager.
When we come back from the break, I want to talk about Brzezinski and a couple of his really famous or infamous quotes regarding on where this is headed. I know that's a topic close to your heart. And given the fact this is the resurrection day for our Lord Jesus Christ, I want to talk about the impact that technocracy is going to have on evangelical Christianity, because I believe it's already had an impact. But I think it's going to get a whole lot worse before it gets better. Anyway, we're going to step aside, everybody, and when we come back, we'll be rejoined by Pat Wood, and we'll answer those two questions. Happy Easter, everybody.
Body is extraordinary. Despite all the stresses we inflict upon it, it still works hard to stay in balance. Thousands upon thousands of people rely upon Heart and Body Extract to help their body stay balanced. This excellent 100% natural herbal formula helps maintain healthy blood pressure levels, cleans arteries, promotes good circulation, balances cholesterol, and more. HB Extract, paired with healthy lifestyle choices like good nutrition and exercise, can give you a life free of pain, sickness, and fear. Recapture your youthful vitality and experience your body healing itself with the aid of HB Extract. It's extremely effective and it starts working in just days. Visit HBExtract.com to learn more and to read scores of testimonials from satisfied customers. And we've never increased our price in over 10 years. That makes Heart and Body Extract as great a value now as it was the first day we sold it. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Call 866-295-5305 or go to HBExtract.com.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet, this is the Global Star Radio Network.
Hi, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I've created a non-electric self-watering food production system that grows nutritious food with almost no effort and at very little cost. It's called the Food Rising Mini Farm Grow Box. And the best part is, I show you how to make your own in do-it-yourself videos on the new website, foodrising.org. There, you'll also find freely downloadable 3D object files that you can use to print the key components of the system on your own 3D printer. It's all part of the open source revolution, where we freely share good ideas that empower people to be more self-reliant and practical in a world that's increasingly unpredictable. This Food Rising Grow system will produce food for you even if the power grid fails, because it has no pumps, and no complex moving parts. Join the Food Rising Revolution now at www.foodrising.org.
When you think of getting old, what comes to your mind? Spending the last years of your life in a nursing home? Staring out a window? Medicated to keep you docile? Not able to recognize your own kids? Suffering with some dreaded disease until you die all alone? Well, think again. One of the premier doctors in the world, Dr. James Forsythe, wrote the book, Anti-Aging Cures, Life-Changing Secrets to Reverse the Effects of Aging, your key to the real fountain of youth. And Suzanne Summers, the perpetual face of eternal youth, wrote the foreword. As mentioned in the book, Royal Velvet is the most cost-effective, easiest, and complete way to reverse the effects of aging. It's true. So, do you want glowing skin, less wrinkles, thicker hair, less gray hair, your hormones balanced, improved memory, a toned physique, greater energy, less pain and stiffness, as well as benefits too numerous to name? Go to RoyalVelvetNow.com. Click on the rinse icon in the upper right-hand corner, and within a couple of days, you can be on the path to youthful living. RoyalVelvetNow.com. Your life will never be the same.
The lining of your lungs is supposed to be protected with glutathione to neutralize incoming irritants. In the absence of enough glutathione, your lungs are more prone to irritation. Listen to the real-world results of one man using a powerful glutathione-supporting food.
Hi, my name is Bill O'Brien. I generally suffer through an asthmatic breathing-type situation. My breathing is shallow and generally constricted in the nose and lungs. After consuming One World Away today, I have tremendous energy and also notice my breathing is free. I can feel the air in my left nostril, and it is free all the way to my abdomen, which is pretty remarkable because I rarely get that feeling. Being a singer, I love feeling this unrestricted voice. The only thing new I've actually added to my routine is One World Way. Wow.
Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
What makes noise? It's ringing in my ear. What makes noise? And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell. And he's not gonna take it anymore. This is The Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome back on this happy Easter. Our special guest is Pat Wood. And before we rejoin Pat, I want to remind you about our friend Katie at FamilyEssentialShop.com. And she's telling me it's time to stop being a guinea pig, Dave. You need to get on board with what we're doing. All we're doing is making money for Big Pharma. There's no way to stop this incessant attack on our health. And, it never ends. In fact, when you hear Josh Coy's account of how he's medically kidnapped, you're going to see exactly what Katie's talking about. She wants you to join a system where we teach about healthcare. We teach you how to take care of yourself. And what you're hearing here tonight with Pat Wood is the ability to take care of yourself using natural means is going to become critical. So we would encourage you to visit FamilyEssentialShop.com for a complete list of natural remedies. And if you mention that you heard this ad on the Common Sense Show, Dave Hodges, Katie will give you, depending on the product, 15 to 25% off. Again, that's FamilyEssentialShop.com. And you can call Katie in the morning at 720-630-3111. That's 720-630-3111. Pat, given the fact it's Easter, this is very topical, very timely. But I see our church, our Christian church, being gutted by this government and by this process. And I have a feeling it's going to get a whole lot worse if we allow it.
Well, it is, and it's not an exact cause from technocracy that the church has been watered down or neutralized, if you will. It's closely related, but back in the 1980s, the evangelical church especially was seeded with a bunch of ideas that came from a famous business consultant by the name of Peter Drucker. And Peter Drucker was an evangelist, if you will, for a philosophy called communitarianism.
Yes.
He was not a Christian. He admitted he was not He had no interest in being a Christian and was not. But he believed that the churches should be used to support society for its, you know, the global direction that it was going. And so he introduced the evangelical church to the communitarian philosophy, which essentially is, you know, working or finding your identity in the good of the community rather than just your intrinsic value. So everything in communitarianism has to do with the public good, with the greater good, and that you should be subservient to the greater good at all costs. What happened over the years, especially with the megachurch movement, is the people who would be pastors of those churches have essentially been converted into being community organizers instead. They still look like a church on the outside. They still have some vestiges of a church on the inside. But down deep in their heart, the pastors are no longer caring for the people. They're organizing the community. And not just in the church, but in their whole physical community in their area. And we see this model being played out virtually in every city across America today. And it's a very disturbing trend, in my opinion, in the evangelical church. Because people are falling between the cracks, and they're inadvertently playing into the globalist hands of the global community, you see. It's a mindset thing. Very nefarious. Not good. Not a good thing at all.
I'm seeing a number of churches embrace sustainability, the green movement. And yeah. I don't know, what are they trying to accomplish? What could they possibly be thinking? In what scripture and verse are they finding that they should be promoting this trash?
Well, there is none. Truly, there isn't. But, you know, the psychology behind it, or the rationale behind it is if taken from Genesis, well, God told Adam to go out, be a gardener, to be a steward of the whole world, and to take good care of it. And somehow they would say today that the church has that original mandate still to fulfill, that we should be the stewards of the earth, if you will, and return the earth to its Eden type, you know, Garden of Eden type scenario. Put everything back where it belongs again, if you will. It's a twisted logic. I don't think there's any basis for it at all, but people believe it, and churches believe it. And like you said, now, if you go and look at the National Council of Churches and the World Council of Churches website, you will see nothing but green all over it. Totally,
yes.
They're totally sold out to sustainable development.
But the paradigm, I mean, I don't know how anyone who has gone through any kind of seminary, studied theology, could embrace this, because, see, it's the paradigm that's turned upside down. In the Bible, God gave man dominion over the earth, followed by animal, fish, fowl, and the earth is in last place. The earth is here to support life, not the other way around. Yet when you look at the globalist paradigm for the green movement, the earth comes first, the Gaia movement, and man is at the bottom of the pyramid, below all other forms of life. How could any Bible-believing Christian think that this is a proper paradigm?
Yep, they really can't, other than the fact that they're just deceived with this concept. They couldn't possibly justify it with their training that they originally had. They just can't. And they can't justify it strictly just from the Bible either. They have to be deceived into thinking that this position is correct. And we know who the great deceiver in the world is. He's busy today deceiving people all over the world with sustainable development. And I might add, speaking of just deception, there has never been a global deception in the history of the world since the Tower of Babel incident in Genesis. There has never been a global deception like there is in the world today with sustainable development. It's everywhere. You go to any country in the world, you'll find the same propaganda, and people believe in it.
Yeah, I have couched this in this light, Pat. I have said at the root of sustainability is Satanism. And people say, oh, Dave, there you go again, you know, promoting those extreme views. This has nothing to do with Satanism. And but, Pat, it sure, certainly doesn't have anything to do with God giving man dominion over the earth.
Well, it doesn't. And, you know, Jesus himself said that that Satan is the god of this world currently. Now, within limits and within certain permissions, certainly by God himself, but he is termed the god of this world, not the other way around. And so if he's in charge of this world system right now, then it's no wonder we see all these perversions and stuff that are taking place in the world today. You know, maybe he figures his time is short and he better get busy screwing things up, you know, getting ready for the end. I can't say for sure, but, you know, the Bible makes it very clear. And even Jesus, by the way, when the devil took him out of, after Jesus came out of the fasting in the wilderness for 40 days, 40 nights, the devil took him up to a high mountain and he offered him all the kingdoms of the world. And he said, if you'll just bow down and worship me, I will give you all the kingdoms of the world. And did Jesus argue with him that they were not his to give? No. He didn't at all. He knew that Satan had control over him at that point. But, of course, the equation tilted after the resurrection, which is what we're celebrating today, because when Jesus came out of captivity, if you will, in Hades, he came out with the keys of hell and death in his hand. He took them away from the devil. So now we have a slightly different balance to things than we did before the death of Christ and the resurrection. But yes, the world indeed seems to be spinning out of control today. And many of the things that we look at today and talk about, we just have to realize that behind the whole thing, there is an intelligence. It's an evil intelligence that is probably vastly superior to ours, in one sense, vastly more evil than ours. And when you look at things people have done in history, like Adolf Hitler, for instance, all you can do is shake your head. You say, you know what? You can't explain the nature of man by looking at Adolf Hitler, but you sure can understand the nature of evil and the nature of Satanism by looking at what Adolf Hitler did. Certainly it was.
And we did see the Nazis embrace this philosophy?
You know what? Absolutely, positively they did. And we have evidence of that. Hitler was more green than Al Gore. Truly. He was.
Okay. You've got to explain that one, Pat.
I'll tell you what. I'll give you the name offline. I'll give you the name of a guy who wrote the book on it. You need to get this guy on your radio show, and he'll tell you about his book. It'd blow your mind. This may be the topic of my next book that I write from scratch. It may have to do with the green links of technocracy to Nazi Germany, because there were a number of technocrats. In fact, there was a whole technocracy organization in Nazi Germany as Hitler took power. And many people believe that without those technocrats, Hitler would have gotten nowhere. They were the ones that provided the technology for him to do what he did. It's interesting. That's for another story.
That is interesting. Wow, I had never considered the depth of that. That's crazy. Have you seen the first part of the trilogy called The Hunger Games?
I have.
Oh, my goodness. You had to be sitting there in utter amazement, as I was, when you saw the 12 districts, the barrier with the wild habitat, the drones patrolling, the prohibition on hunting your own food, and then the bullet train going to Capital City with thousands of miles of wilderness uninhabited by man. Could it have been any more blatant?
No, it couldn't have. That would be like Aldous Huxley's Brave New World to technocracy. Because he wrote that in 1932, and he was looking at technocracy to get inspiration for the book Brave New World. The Hunger Games, it's like the author of that was looking straight into Agenda 21.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. It just, you know.
She doesn't give interviews, Pat. She was on Good Morning America, and quite honestly, the interview was awful. And we tried for the better part of a year to get her on, and I heard other people, shows bigger than ours, expressing the same thing. And I decided to do some research on her and this other author named Margaret Haddix. My son read the Hunger Games trilogy in the fifth grade, and he read another book called Among the Hidden, which was about population control and food control. And he read both of these in the fifth grade. And so I tried to get Margaret Haddix on the show. Now, she's not nearly as big as Suzanne Collins. She travels to elementary school selling her books. And I thought that should be a pretty easy get. She wanted nothing to do with us. And as I researched this, Pat, and this is the part I hope everyone's sitting down for, these women wrote advanced Agenda 21 movies with stunning detail. They had advanced knowledge of this philosophy. Yet neither one of these women who wrote their books at about the same time, not one of these women, Pat, had ever written anything but a child's fantasy novel.
Yeah.
That was the only thing they had ever written. And I maintain the reason they don't do interviews is they don't know their topic that well. I also maintain that they didn't write the plot. They may have put the words on the page, and they might have written the allegories and the similes and all that, but I suspect that they didn't write this. I think this was written for them as part of a conditioning process.
Well, somebody certainly came up with the idea, that detailed of an idea, which was a very detailed plot, and the scenery and the, you know, the way the whole thing was put together and the message that comes out of it is just absolutely incredible. It just could not have, you know, somebody couldn't have just had a dream some night and said, "Oh, I got an idea for a story. I think I'm going to go write it down this week." Things don't happen that way in the book world.
No, they had to do an advanced study of Agenda 21 policies because, particularly in the Hunger Games, the book is filled with more of it in writing. But in the movie, I was stunned on how much they got in the first 20 minutes. I was just in utter shock when I saw this. And I think what it is, a conditioning process designed to say, this is the new world order. This is your reality. There's nothing you can do about it.
I think so. And there's been lots of other movies that have brought forth similar themes as well. There's also been a number of movies on transhumanism lately, just, you know, blockbuster movies. And, you know, wherever they're getting their storylines, of course, is coming from the tech world mostly, but however they're getting it, it's very detailed scenarios that they're writing about. And to the extent where it all really seemed, it's hard to determine which is science fiction and which is real. It blurs the distinctions between the two, so people get confused.
One of the things I've noticed with these movies that are very revealing about New World Order agendas, I mean, I just watched The Kingsman this last week, and it was about implant and chipping technology and frequency control of the brain. And yet, in every one of these movies, they have the good guys prevailing at the end. It's kind of like, here it is, but it's not going to be that bad because the good guys are going to win. So they want to take away the edge.
Yeah,
you know, psychological ploy of brainwashing. You know, I haven't jumped into transhumanism on purpose in a very big way tonight, Pat, because I want to have you back in not too distant future to just explore that, because that's a show unto itself. And I wanted to go through a good portion of your book, you know, aside from transhumanism, knowing we're going to cover it in detail. But in just a few thoughts here, tell people about how transhumanism is the end game and it arises out of technocracy.
Well, the basis for technocracy and transhumanism both is the philosophy of scientism. And scientism is a religion. It is a nefarious type of religion, completely antithetical to biblical history or the Judeo-Christian epic, etc. And I think that scientism, the best way to understand it is to look at the father of technocracy, who a guy by the name of Henry de Saint Simon. He lived back in between 1760 and 1825, and he said back then, quote, "A scientist, my dear friends, is a man who foresees. It is because science provides the means to predict that it is useful, and the scientists are superior to all other men, close quote. That's where this whole thing started, with this kind of attitude. It's a dangerous attitude that scientists are somehow superior to all other men. But what's happening today is epitomized in an article. It was on the headline on Drudge Report today, interesting for Easter, a story from the Washington Post. The headline says, Tech Titans' Latest Project, Defy Death. And it goes on to talk about people like Ray Kurzweil and Peter Thiel and other transhumanists in the tech world who are attempting to conquer death through their technology. Just incredible, incredible. But, the key here is the very big top people in the tech world believe that they're going to solve the problem of death and that they're going to conquer death and escape what the rest of humanity has succumbed to for the last thousands of years. I think this is a great deception, personally. I don't think they're going to get close to it. But they think they are. And we see this in universities all over the world today. They're pursuing this. And, where, by the way, Dave, you'll appreciate this, where transhumanism really got its practical kickstart in the modern era was in the early 2000s when the organization near and dear to our heart called DARPA, you can tell people what DARPA stands for, but when DARPA got the idea that technology could be applied to humans to create a race of, if you will, of super soldiers, that's when transhumanism really took off around the world. It was an arms race. It was a space race. It was a death race, if you will, to try and conquer death and create humans 2.0 that would be technologically superior to what we have today.
In your opinion, true or false, Pat, super robots that are autonomous as well as controlled, in other words, capable of making autonomous decisions, will be doing policing actions on humans in the future?
Absolutely. No question about it.
I believe that too.
Absolutely.
I believe that wholeheartedly. Well, Pat, I got a couple more things I want to ask you about, but before we run out of time, I want to give you an opportunity here to tell people how they should get a hold of a copy of your book. So let's talk about your website and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. The website for the book is technocracyrising.com. That's also the name of the book, so it's easy to remember. And people can get it there from me. It helps me if you buy it from me because you're going to pay a few dollars more. But you can buy it from Amazon.com as well, and there's a Kindle version if you like to read it on an e-reader. But you'll get the same book whether you buy it from Amazon or from me. If you buy it from me, I'll autograph you and send an autographed copy out. But I do want to say that listening to an interview like this is no substitute for reading the book. I cannot stress that enough. I talked with John B. Wells for 3.5 hours, and I came to the same conclusion. I only scratched the surface of about 10% of the material. So people just need to get the book and read it. There is no substitute for reading the book. There's just too much information in it to cover in a 2-hour, 3-hour, 8-hour program on the radio, if there was such a thing. Even then I couldn't do it. My voice would wear out.
Okay, so technocracyrising.com is the best way to order your book. And also, if people go to the show description tonight at thecommonsenseshow.com, I've hypertext linked to Pat's website, and you'll see all the ordering information there. And as he said, he would autograph a copy of the book, as he did for me. Thank you very much for that, Pat. But
you're welcome.
Let's leave people with an element of hope, since this is the day of hope for humanity. In a couple of minutes, tell people what we can do to make this better.
For me right now, that's easy. Take your eyes off of national politics for a while. Maybe keep a half an eyeball on national politics, but people need to get busy locally and throw this technocracy nonsense out of their local community now. They need to go to the meetings, the zoning committee meetings, the city council meetings. They need to find out what their local elected representatives are doing to bring this garbage out down to your local community and run this concept out of town. You can't get your hands on the EPA. You can't get your hands on Obama. You can't get your hands on Congress. They're just ignoring the whole thing at this point, completely impotent. But you can get your hands on your local community where you live, and that's what you need to do. And enough people do this on a local basis, don't think you won't send the message up the food chain to the people that are up above them or the next layer up, whether it's a county level, a state level, a regional level, or whatever. And just get busy in your local community and be an evangelist to throw out technocracy, Agenda 21, ICLEI, smart growth, smart grid, all of these things. People need to understand we're fighting an enemy that wants to destroy the fabric of our life completely. This is not a, we're not just playing games here. We're fighting a battle. You must know who the enemy is. That's why you need my book. And then you have to take action on a local basis. That's your foxhole, if you will.
Absolutely. Well, Pat, I'm going to be in touch with you soon for a couple of reasons, but the primary reason is we need to book part two. And we need to get you back on here, talk about transhumanism in some depth and detail, and also a little bit more on the action planning side of things. We really appreciate you being with us on this Easter Sunday. God bless you and your family, and we look forward to having you back on again.
It's been great, Dave. Thank you so much for your work.
Thank you, Pat. Pat Wood, ladies and gentlemen, longtime old friend. We've done a number of things together. I feel like we're brothers in arms, and I'm telling you, you need to get a copy of this book. It's fantastic. Anyway, we're going to step aside. We'll see you back here in hour number three with Katie and Annie.
On Facebook, on the news, and in conversations with friends, we're bombarded every day with advice on how to be healthier, from gluten-free and non-GMO diets to how much exercise and sleep the body needs. But how much have you heard about alkalizing the body? AlkaVision Plasma pH drops are a holistic levels back in balance. Just a few drops in water will help your body rid itself of harmful waste. And even the healthiest of diets can be complemented with your daily use of AlkaVision Plasma pH drops. Who isn't looking for more vibrance, vigor, and energy? Now buy two bottles of AlkaVision Plasma pH drops and get $10 off your order. Visit AlkaVision.com or call 800-518-7615. AlkaVision Plasma pH drops are packed with a powerful combination of the most alkaline minerals and compounds. Open the door to greater health, vitality, and zest for life. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health. Call 800-518-7615 or head to AlkaVision.com.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.